Well, yesterday, the United States Senate effectively killed this plan that some key senators and President Bush had been pushing for when it came to dealing with immigration in this country and illegal immigration and turning them into immigrants or turning them into citizens or turning them into guest workers or however you want to frame the plan. It is effectively dead at this point, raising the question, well, now what? Nathan Thornburg is a senior editor for Time magazine who's written a piece called The Case for Amnesty that appears on the Time.com website. Nathan, I appreciate you taking time to be on KMOX this afternoon.
Thanks, Paul. It's good to be with you.
And by the way, we were going to have Nathan at the top of the show, but he got bumped for Paris coverage, just like you did this morning on MSNBC, right?
It's good to see the nation is focusing on the things that affect us most.
Yeah. Well, explain to me why you think that amnesty can work.
Well, I mean, first off, as you had mentioned with the bill, I think a lot of people, including the people who wrote the bill, are not really sure what it is. And it's important to start off with saying this bill is amnesty. I mean, you know, John McCain and President Bush and Ted Kennedy all say it isn't. But you know, the idea of letting people stay here in this country after having come in illegally is just amnesty, plain and simple.
Even if they have to pay a fine and even if they have to go through several years and learn English and all the rest?
Right. I mean, those are just add-ons made to sort of evoke a certain toughness about it, but it doesn't change the underlying thing. And my argument, and you know, this is why we put the story on the cover this week, is it's important to say that really that's not a bad thing. I mean, amnesty has become a very toxic term in this debate, but when people sit there and look at the facts and look at all of the particular options that are open to us as a country that actually has come to rely on this population so much, amnesty is probably the best solution out there.
So are you suggesting that we just say to the 12 million or whatever the number is, illegal immigrants who are here, you can stay?
Yeah. I mean, it's fine to have fines and conditions that are going to help sort of finance that process. For example, you certainly need to be very sure that you're not, you know, letting people who are felons and real criminals be a part of that group. But the idea of, you know, saying, okay, you can stay is almost kind of moot. I mean, what the Senate did by sort of killing this bill yesterday was say to the 12 million Americans, okay, you can stay. Because the status quo, as you and I both know, means that you have a tremendous population living here that effectively is not going to leave, not even with the sort of, you know, uptick in enforcement that we've seen.
So part of the problem that I had with the bill was this ridiculous notion that people would be allowed to stay if they left and came back. An unworkable proposition because you don't have a federal bureaucracy large enough, nor do we want one large enough, to be able to monitor the comings and goings of people who are already living in an underground society. Mm-hmm. If we can't keep track of them now, how are we going to know when they do leave and when they do come back, and who's going to make sure every 24 months that we're checking on where they are and what they've done? That seemed to be the most unworkable of propositions. But the reality is that you do have many people who do come to this country for seasonal work or to go home and visit their families, not just in Mexico, but in Honduras and other parts of Central America, and then do come back over the border. What do we do about that?
Well, first of all, I think that's very smart of you to say that you're not going to be able to sort of bureaucratize this problem in a way. You know, we have a tremendous problem down at the southern border of the United States, and it has to do with enforcing that border. However, it's not all new immigrants that are coming across every day. A huge, if also sort of unquantifiable percentage of those who are crossing illegally at the southern border are people who, the people you're talking about, who already have lives here in the United States and were going home for a funeral or for a wedding because their seasonal job is over. If we can get them out of the drug tunnels of Tijuana, we're going to make our job down at the border a lot easier already.
So are you suggesting that we just say to the illegals who are here, look, here's a tax ID number. You're not going to be a citizen yet, but you can work towards that, and we'll set up a time where maybe 10 or 15 years from now, if you meet these, and I know the president hates this word, benchmarks, then you are already, by the fact that you're already here, you're already on your way to becoming a citizen of the United States of America.
Yeah, and I do think that's the right thing, and let me tell you why. I spent a good deal of time, not very far from St. Louis, to report this story. I was in the town of Beardstown, Illinois, which, you know, if you know anything about Beardstown, it has undergone a tremendous shift in the last 10 years from being nearly an all-white or sort of German immigrant town to being largely Hispanic, particularly in the younger and the school age population.
Is that the place where they busted the Cargill plant?
That's exactly right. And they've had tremendous problems. So on April 4th, they went into the biggest employer in town, this multinational that's got a meatpacking plant there, and they took away, they were targeting a subcontractor that was cleaning the plant. But nonetheless, it was a huge shock to everybody in the community. What can happen when you actually start to try to enforce the immigration laws that are on the books. I mean, it caused a lot of problems, not just for the Hispanics, but for the white people, for everybody who depends on the economic engine of Beardstown to keep running. And, you know, there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of cultural conflict. There's a lot of resentment at the newcomers. But at the end of the day, you know, the people who are in charge with making sure that Beardstown is going to be a healthy, thriving community basically have come around to the idea of amnesty as well. They don't like it. They wish they could turn the clock back and have great jobs for American workers and not have to rely on this new workforce. But the facts of the matter in Beardstown tell you that these people are here. They're actually driving the economy of that town. And, you know, a lot of the tensions and the problems come from the very illegality of those workers. So get that off the books and you have a fresh you know, sort of slate, and you're going to have a much happier town.
I was talking about this bill a couple of weeks ago and wondering why America's unions weren't standing up on their tippy toes to raise their hand and say, we're against this, because so many of these illegals who come in here are taking wages below union members' wages, and in some cases even below the prevailing minimum wage.
Well, you know, as you know, unions have actually been sort of shifting their positions on immigrants and even illegal immigrants for some time. I mean, you know, the cynics say that they simply need to curry favor with what they feel is going to be the next big group of union members. There are, however, some arguments that are being made that are fairly persuasive on the other side of what you just suggested, though, which is to say, you know, once American workers, and that includes these illegal workers who are here doing jobs in America, if you take them out of the shadows where they're so easily exploited and so easily coaxed into working for these wages that really undercut American workers, that if you give them amnesty, allow them to come up and sort of become members of society that can say, listen, I deserve to, you know, make $11 for working this job instead of $7, then you can sort of, it would be a rising tide that would lift all boats. Certainly, the system that we have now, you're absolutely right, of illegality where people are, you know, basically have no other option than to work for very little money, it does hurt the unions. And you know, some of the unions are supporting the compromise, though, because they feel like this is one way that they could get those illegal workers to start earning more money and become a part of the American workforce.
Let's go to the phones, 314-436-7900, toll-free, 800-925-1120. Ron, you're on the Paul Harris Show with Nathan Thornburg. Hello.
Yeah, thank you, Paul, for taking my call.
Sure.
I just live right next to Beardstown, and what happened down there was that it was a cleaning company that came in there, and they done all this stuff. It wasn't the plant itself.
Right. Yeah, I did try to make that clear, but you're absolutely right. It was a raid on a subcontractor called QSI.
Right. And, you know, I just want to express something that, you know, there's about 30% Mexicans down there in Beardstown.
Mm-hmm.
What I can't understand, sir, is why don't they have to pay taxes and they get everything in the book and we get nothing?
You know, I heard that so many times, that same sentiment, and you know, it's a very valid one. Basically, you want to have the people who are in your community contributing as much as possible. They don't pay taxes because they live in fear of being discovered as illegals. I mean, they don't want to create a paper trail. That's the same reason why they don't go to primary care doctors. All of those things hurt the rest of us, and it's an argument for bringing them on the books and out of the shadows.
So you're saying if you give them amnesty and you give them a tax ID number and you bring them up from underground, then they will have to pay taxes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. These are not inveterate tax cheats. These are people who are living off the books in America entirely.
All right. Thanks for calling, Ron. Here's Ralph on KMOX. Hi.
Hi, Paul. I was calling today because I think that the illegals, the 12 million that we talk about, and probably 8 million more that we don't talk about, have kept our high school graduates that have decided not to go to college. I'm the father of two that decided college wasn't their thing. One is a young carpenter making a load of dough in this country. One is a young lady who can't find a job over $8 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And if we sent the 20 million people back home, everybody's wages would go up. So this union thing about...
All right, let me just start with one thing. Before we talk about the wages, how are you going to get all those people out of the country, Ralph? Tell me what your plan would be, because I hear this from people all the time. Oh, just send them home. Tell me how that would work.
Well, like Americans, we say, let's send these people out of the country, and we think tomorrow. Well, I don't foresee it being a six-week program or a three-year program, maybe a 10-year program, maybe a 15-year program.
But tell me how it's going to work.
Well, I think that you have to first close the border and then go into areas like Beardstown, and I wasn't familiar with Beardstown till this young man came on, and go in and see who has a green card.
So you go along to every single person and stop them on the street, or do you only do it to the Hispanics?
I think anybody that can't provide a Social Security card number to show that they're paying taxes. We have people in this country every day that the IRS takes everything they own.
You got plenty of people in the underground society of the illegal immigrants who do have Social Security cards or tax ID numbers that have been given them by the United States government. Am I right, Nathan?
Well, certainly the tax ID numbers. The Social Security cards would have been given to them by the guy on the corner.
Yeah, they're bogus numbers, or some guy
or
died
stolen.
And they took it over,
yeah.
Or stole it, or identity theft.
Right.
Is a problem there. And again, I'm not saying we don't have problems here. I'm just saying, am I wrong when I say it's impractical to think that we can get all of them out of the country?
Well, I mean, you know, one thing that I would say is that our economy, whether or not we like it, is very heavily reliant on them. And, you know, if we were, you know, let's go with this idea that somehow we're going to sort of coax or coerce these folks to leave the country again. We would actually have to change a lot of things about the way our economy works. It's very possible we would have to stop being a country that is self-sufficient agriculturally, for example. We would have to rethink having manufacturing as a big part of our economy. Now, other countries like the UK has done this already, and they don't have the same sort of illegal immigrant problem because they don't have farm workers. They buy all of their food from overseas. We would have to stop being addicted to cheap products across the board. The idea of a Walmart where you can go in and get all of your products for as little money as you can, we would have to definitely rethink that.
Well, no, we would continue to get that stuff from overseas where you have people who haven't come here yet who are still making that thing for pennies a day.
Although it's all part of the same system of globalization and the tension, the problem that we have in this country with, you know, immigration and sort of figuring out where our hearts are on this is because there's this tension between free trade and free movement of goods and free movement of labor. We want one and we don't want the other, but often they go hand in hand.
All right, Ralph, I'm glad you called. Before I let you go, Nathan, one final question for you, and I'll get to more calls after we let Nathan go here. But what keeps the next wave of illegal immigrants out of this country if we give the group that's here now amnesty? Or are you saying we just open the border and anybody who wants to come here gets to come here?
That's certainly not something that I'm in favor of. It's a good question. You know, a lot of people look back at the amnesty of 1986, which sort of legalized about 3 million people, and saw that right after that, we started to get a much bigger wave, and this 12 million came after 1986. And they say, well, hey, look, everybody in the outside world just figured that the U.S. is weak and would relent and grant amnesty at some point, so let's go there right now. But I think the truth is that illegal immigration flows track with the economies of both the U.S. and Mexico much more closely than it does with policing or policy here. So if you want to get rid of illegal amnesty or illegal immigration, you could have a recession here, which is not a very good idea.
I'm not voting for that one. What's my next choice?
You could take the economy in Mexico as a serious commitment. It's not pleasant. It's not a great system to wade into, but the U.S. can do more.
I think we have a better chance of victory in Iraq. What's choice number three?
And choice number three is the difference between now and 1986 is that we have both the political will and the technology to actually do the job right in enforcing our borders this time. Whether it's a tamper-proof national ID card that a lot of people are against, but a lot of people, you know, say is a technological possibility, whether it's real employer verification with actual databases that would no longer let employers make excuses for hiring the next wave of illegals, or whether it's technology at the border or fencing and more border patrol, you know, politically we are in a very different place now than we were 20 years ago. I think if we did an amnesty now, we would have much more of the will and the ability to actually shut down the borders and make sure that this is the last amnesty of this size that we would ever have to do.
The case for amnesty is the cover story in the new Time magazine. It's on time.com. A link to it, of course, from my website, harrisonline.com. Nathan, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be with you.
Nathan Thornburg, senior editor of Time, here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.